Welcome to the Provider Podcast. I'm Adam Brimley. Today, we're talking about support for leaders in building an anti-racist approach and culture within their organizations. The conversation is part of a range of resources, including reports, blogs, videos, podcasts, and events, reflecting NHS providers' commitment on this issue. In our conversations, we'll showcase interventions that are really making a difference. In a moment, we'll hear from Eniola Oladipo, Head of Support and Transformation at NHS England, about the role of leaders in creating psychologically safe environments with a focus on the role of staff equality networks. But first, Tracy Jolliffe, NHS England's Head of Inclusive System Development, and her work on the Building Leadership for Improvement programme. She begins by setting out the key developments and challenges.
So I'd say, first of all, that there was a huge awakening, wasn't there, back in 2020 with George Floyd, and then the COVID pandemic itself, which had such a disproportionate impact on staff with long-term health conditions and Black and minority ethnic staff. I think the combination of those events really was a wake-up call for us all. First of all, drawing our attention to the fact that racial equity and justice is still too far off. You know, it should be closer than it is. And that we all, and especially us as leaders, have a responsibility to do something about that. So following that, I think there has been a huge growth in terms of awareness and initiatives to try and tackle some of those issues societally, as well as in terms of people's intentions. But I think that the gap between our policies and practices and aspirations on inclusion is quite large when you compare that to the capabilities and knowledge of our leaders and managers at all levels to be able to close that gap. You know, so we need to build the capability of our leaders to be able to work inclusively, think inclusively, centre inclusion in their decision making, and close gaps on health inequalities and change and transform workforce experiences of inclusion. We've just had another landmark case, haven't we, of Michelle Cox, who won a racial discrimination case. We can't keep going down this road. We have to move into the space of preventing these situations happening and the damage that they do and the harm that they do to people personally by equipping our leaders with inclusive leadership capabilities that enables them to create the cultures of inclusion that have a positive impact on staff and patients and service users wherever they may be.
And we just very recently had the RES data, haven't we, which indicates some progress in some areas, in other areas, absolutely
completely.
Not.
Completely. It's patchy. And, you know, having been working in the space of leadership development, OD and EDI, for the best part of 30 years, it is patchy and it has been since then. And there are certain statements that I keep hearing, you know, and heard 30 years ago, and they're still being said today. Things like leaders saying, well, I don't want to get things wrong, so I'm reluctant to say anything. If we're still there, we really haven't made the progress that we could be making and should be making. And there are some reasons as to why things like the RES data, like the WDES data, aren't budging. And this resides in the space of leadership and our leadership thinking and practice. And also, you know, the ultimate responsibility for this, it's at board level.
And I know a key part of your work is related to the Building Leadership for Inclusion programme. I'd be interested if you could just tell us a little bit about what this programme is and how it will provide leaders with the understanding and skills to lead the sorts of change that is clearly necessary.
So the Building Leadership for Inclusion initiative is, we definitely weren't wanting to build a programme in its contemporary sense. So it wasn't just a leadership development programme, with the aims of working on real issues in real time. So it's aimed at board level leaders and ICBs. And the aims of the programme is for leaders to have a greater awareness and deeper understanding of inequity and its impact on minoritised people in the workforce, patients and service users. for leaders to have a commitment and to create ambitious aspirations in relation to leading for greater equity, diversity and inclusion, to identify what's required in terms of actions needed to bring about change and have a personal and a collective agreement to take action, and to effectively embed equality, equity, social and racial justice into every aspect of system and system working. Its work is both individual and collective. So it starts by looking at the self, really having an examination of what do I bring to the table as a board member, my beliefs, my ideas, my experiences, my understandings, what do I bring? And moves to looking at what do we bring collectively to the table, you know, and how do we work collectively to have a positive impact on these things? And it looks at how board members really hold each other to account and critique each other's practice. Because if we can't talk about issues like discrimination, racism, ableism, LGBT staff, you know, if we can't talk openly about those things, make no mistake, we can't deal with them either. You know, so it enables boards to become more literate in relation to issues relating to EDI, and particularly issues relating to racial justice and racial equity, because race has always been a stumbling block. And that's partly because of some faulty thinking that we've grown up with. We've just imbibed through the way that we've understood race. You know, some faulty thinking we have about ourselves. You know, if we can't talk about our own racial identity, we can't understand other people's experiences of their racial identity. And also some faulty thinking about, you know, how discrimination works, and therefore how we need to intervene to address discrimination and bias. And discrimination isn't always intentional. So intention gets in the way because people think that this is about intention. So this program really digs deep in relation to all of these themes, really growing a new understanding about what the problem is and how we can, as board leaders, solve some of those problems, co-creating the solutions with the people that these issues matter to the most.
Clearly some real sort of challenges for boards there to sort of revisit their assumptions and work with colleagues to address the issues that are being raised. I understand that you've been undertaking an evaluation of the pilot phase. Are you able to share any key learnings and insights with us?
So the evaluation has been in two phases. Some of the things that were starting to come out in relation to the evaluation were the board commitment to the work is really important. Where there was board commitment, the board travelled a much longer distance and created far more meaningful actions. We also noticed that where OD leads and chief people officers were involved in the work, there tended to be far more traction, obviously, because the work of EDI is OD work. You know, we often separate the two, but that's what it is. You know, at the centre of OD should be EDI. There was a recognition, I think, that there is a lot more work needed in this space, and that, you know, the Building Leadership for Inclusion initiative was merely scratching the surface, and that the work needed to continue beyond the program and in order to drive even greater levels of awareness around EDI issues and greater degrees of change in relation to staff experiences in the workplace and patient and user experiences. A lot of more board members were actually stating that they didn't know what to do. We thought that this was a plus because sometimes people are asked at board level to make statements on, make decisions on issues of EDI, and board members sometimes don't feel able to say, actually, I haven't got a clue. So carving out the space where people can say, you know, I really need to understand this a little bit more. I've not done this before. is really important. Also, there was a realization that racial justice work isn't 9-to-5 work. This is about making a personal commitment to justice and equity. You know, this is a life commitment to work in a just way and an anti-racist way. And I keep saying anti-racism because the program leads through the lens of racial justice. So it enters the conversation of equity and inclusion through that lens and uses an intersectional approach to make sure that racial justice shows up in all of the conversations that we're having, whether the focus is on disability or LGBT plus people, whether it's on women, whether it's about age. There's diversity in all of these categories. There were a number of initiatives that were coming out, and one of them was where board members realized that they needed to be engaging more with the staff networks. One chief exec decided to have monthly meetings with their staff network so that they could raise issues directly with the chief exec. There were a number of really powerful interventions. So one person said, it's one of the best things we've done as a board. The time we've dedicated, the learning and the improvement and the actions taken, the relationship strengthened between board members, that makes you stronger and better placed to weather future challenges. This is a powerful program that will affect me for the rest of my career. And so the way that the program has been designed so that people have transformative experiences like this.
A really fundamental, powerful impact there. Where does it go next?
We would hope that there would be an expansion of the program. They're thinking about how program participants can become program alumni by supporting others on their journey. There's something I think that we can align in terms of the spirit of the Building Leadership for Inclusion initiative, that we can learn from this to align other NHS England initiatives to that spirit of Building Leadership for Inclusion. Also, we would say that we need to keep Building Leadership for Inclusion initiative current, and would say to boards, put your money and your time where your values are. So if we really do want to drive change and progress in the area of EDI, we need to put our time there. We need to do the learning, and we need to invest in these initiatives that are going to really drive change.
Thank you, Tracy. I just wonder if we could think about then and perhaps summarise tangible actions that trust leaders can take to embed inclusive leadership and implement change.
I think the first thing I would say is learn. And when you've done that, do some more learning. Commit to a weekly practice of learning and doing something that you've not done before to advance racial equity and justice and to advance equality, diversity and inclusion. This could be speaking up, challenging your peers, whatever it might be. Make this a weekly practice. Diversify your daily encounters. This is about you as individuals and the board. We can't do this work of racial justice, disability justice, whatever it is, by proxy. Ask ourselves as board members, how are we engaging with our staff networks? And how is this engagement informing my actions and my decisions as a leader? Be more evidence-driven. Use your data to look at what it's telling you and also to look at where the gaps are and plug these gaps on data. And also make sure that you're making sense of data through the lens of lived experience. So have conversations with staff that say, this is what the data is telling us. Can you tell me what your experience of this is? So that we really understand how these things are lived. Co-create some measures that are important to those who are from global racial majorities and who have protected characteristics. Make sure those measures are important to the people that we're claiming to be doing this work in service of. Work on the issues that your minoritized staff are saying are important to them and empower those people to lead the changes that affect them. As a board, be brave enough to follow their lead and make it possible for the work to succeed. So that's really radical action. And if you've not read No More Tick Boxes, read it and implement it. But I would say that the most important piece is to recognize that EDI is relational work. It's relational work, whether on a board and thinking about what's the quality of the relationships I have here in order to challenge and support my colleagues and push us further, or, you know, looking at our own personal social ecosystems and asking how diverse are they? How much exposure am I getting on a daily basis with diverse encounters and people in the community? And how is that informing how I do what I do?
Tracy Jolliffe there. And so on to Eniola Oladipo, Head of Support and Transformation at NHS England. What are she and her colleagues doing to help build inclusion and a culture of belonging in the NHS?
Ultimately, I see my job as quite fascinating, challenging. It's an opportunity as well as a privilege, because it allows me to work across the different areas of inclusion, but bringing into it my transformation background. And we've worked on different projects and programs. Currently, one of the largest ones for us is the Staff Networks program. If I had to describe the outcome that my team works to, or my purpose as a person, a leader in the NHS, leading on support and transformation, it'll be about improving, continuously improving people outcomes. And that includes patients and staff alike. Although this role in itself is primarily focused at the workforce of the NHS, so the 1.3 to 1.5 million people. The values of the team, we're quite values-based. I'm personally values-based. Central to the work we do in the support and transformation team is the shared passion to support our people first. If you look at our methodology, it's about people first, working with them, ensuring that through the journey, there's that process of shared decision-making, shared decision-taking, and really working with people throughout the journey of change, because without people there will be no us, full stop. The second thing we're centered on values wise is around listening. I'm an advocate for people to listen, wishing to be nowhere else, to the lived experiences of people and to learn from them. We're committed to being inclusive, otherwise I wouldn't be in this job, and the team I work with are amazing like they're as well. Open and transparent is another value that the team works around. And I smile because it's gotten me into some challenging environments as well. As you know, NHS England, we do have our red tapes when it comes to comms. However, I believe there can be no real change strategically or otherwise without those, the principles of openness and transparency. Finally, I'm ever so keen to ensure that everyone I work with and all I do is as much as possible evidence-based. I say as much as possible because it won't always be possible. There'll be times where we'll be exploring. There'll be times where we'll be innovating, and things that we're working on may not have happened in the past. So for me, it's that continual strive for improvement. Now, to the work that I mentioned earlier on about the Staff Networks program, a multi-pronged approach I've taken to addressing the gaps we've identified, inequities with our workforce within the NHS.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You mentioned about staff networks, obviously an integral part of many NHS trusts, but they can vary in the support they receive from one organisation to another. So what's the programme you've been developing with network leads and EDI practitioners, and how much headway are you making?
Well, the programme in itself is in three parts. The first part is the development of offers to address needs across all NHS staff networks. This is across all protected characteristics. the offers of support we're offering is there to address the needs we've identified. There's a second area, which is to do with boards and senior leaders. And this is about capability development offers that helps them see things in a new light or in the right way so that they can fulfill their role in supporting staff networks. The third area is for staff network leads and chairs themselves. And this is a program of work that we've handed over to regions now, having done the initial work. So the seven regions, some of them have prioritized that area of work for development and rolling out within their patches. The two areas I mentioned earlier on, the staff network support offer and the board and senior leader support offers, are huge areas of work. And when the work started, it started with a fact find, is what I'd say. We identified particular areas of need. The program started off with an intelligence gathering exercise. We called it the Staff Network Maturity Framework Collection. It was a collection we ran for that year, and the summary of findings was comprehensive. I believe 70%, there are about 70% of NHS organizations, even though it was the first of its kind, completed the returns, and it was between staff network chairs and leads and the directors and sponsors who work together to complete the returns for their organization. The intelligence and insights we gleaned as a national team from that work was what gave us this insight into where those gap areas are. There was a low understanding and in some cases lack of awareness of what it meant to create spaces or opportunities for inclusive decision-making practices across the NHS. Limited reward recognition for the important work that staff networks do in the NHS as well. So one of those tangible things where that we came up with and are still developing them, they're due to launch soon. We came up with tangible solutions, evidence-based, that can help push us forward and move that needle dial further, much further forward in our work with NHS staff networks.
So you've established what was actually happening in terms of your intelligence gathering. You had a strong sense of what looks good, and you developed some recommendations and ideas on how to take things forward. From the programme of work you've done so far, what learnings and insights do you have that you can really bring to bear?
The learning and insight have been huge, but leading to that, I must mention two things that has led to that learning. We developed, for the board level sponsors, we developed offers, like I mentioned. There was a toolkit, which is a HTML guide based principles. There was a masterclass session that was developed with case studies as well. The second part is the toolkit we were able to develop for staff network leads and chairs themselves. The toolkit, similar to the work we did for the boards, also contains a guide, templates, case studies as well. Now, when we piloted some of this work. So for the boards, we ran a pilot for the masterclass. For the toolkit, we ran working groups and gathered feedback. And of course, we had that intelligence I mentioned earlier on. Key findings showed us that although 8 out of every 10 NHS trusts who responded to the survey questionnaire, although they said they've got a staff network chair and or a named sponsor in place, only there about 18% or just under 20% of them said they were achieving the outcomes we are seeking to achieve, i.e. ensuring that organizations are embracing staff voices in decision making in order to improve people outcomes. And we also found that trusts that give their staff networks a voice, in essence, their staff a voice in decision making, they tend to perform much better in other areas of business as well. Now, with regards to the masterclass for boards and the offers we developed for board sponsors of staff network, we realized that actually fundamental to fulfilling the role of a sponsor was the need to understand that role itself. So for them to be able to fulfill their responsibilities, there's a requisite for leaders to understand fully what that role meant, the significance of it, and the impact of fulfilling or not fulfilling their duty in empowering staff. There's a second part to it. Although EDI work requires clear leadership, ownership, and people to drive it everywhere and wherever, we all have a key role to play in making the NHS the best place to work. And it was clear that there's a large appetite for change. It is key that in our roles as leaders, we must provide those practical tools to support that work to effect change across the different parts of the NHS. This work cannot be done alone by the few. It's a work that must be prioritized and pushed out to different parts of the organization, giving them, empowering them with tools that enable change.
So you've taken an evidence-based approach. You've come up with materials that really support trust in this really important work. And you're seeing progress in terms of putting these work streams into effect?
We are seeing progress with organizations, absolutely yes. And when it comes to the offers that have been put forward for board sponsors, for example, the pilot we ran showed that those organizations who joined, the leaders not only were able to expose themselves to actually what the roles meant for them, they were also able to pair up and support each other. So organizations we see now supporting each other in the journey to making the NHS a more inclusive place.
We've had now the Workforce Race Equality Standard data coming through. What indication does that give you about where we're up to and where we need most urgently to make progress?
The release of the Workforce Race Equality Standards report this time is very timely. I say that because it highlights the role of leaders in booting out any form of inequity in any organization. And that role, I personally believe, cannot be overemphasized. Take a look at the work Simon Stephen led for the NHS in 2019 with the model employer work. Prior to the model employer 2017-2018, we saw single digits. 6-7% was what representation of Black minority ethnic staff at very senior management levels in the NHS was. Fast forward to the current report, is there about 13-14%? So it's almost doubled in such short time. And whilst I know the model employer goals and the entire strategic plan or work may not have been perfect, what it did was it set that clear direction of travel for the entire NHS, all through its parts, to say, look, this is a priority for us. If we get this right, we will get other things right. Setting that clear direction of travel has steered the organization to where it is today. We still aren't there yet, because I think 13%, 14% is still on the low side as an organization. Yet, we must praise ourselves in the work and our journey to date with regards to improving representation, which is a key factor when it comes to tackling inequities relating to race. The second thing that must be mentioned is around the work the national team is doing on the Workforce Equality, Diversity, Inclusion Improvement Plan. Leaders must take ownership of this work and prioritize actions. This work, I know, is not easy. However, it is possible. And it's possible by engaging and working with staff networks. So if leaders can work with them, engage with them, demonstrate ownership with them, again, it's another step forward in the right direction, I believe. This is a responsibility every single leader must take upon themselves. If each of our 220 plus NHS Trust prioritize this work that I'm talking about, that we're talking about here today, all of our NHS organizations will thrive when it comes to business productivity. The science behind this has been proven time and time again. So if we get it right with our workforce, we will get it right for our patients.
That's it. I hope you found that helpful, insightful, and inspiring. You can find out much more about NHS Providers Race Equality Programme if you go to nhsproviders.org/programmes/race equality. We'll be back soon. A reminder, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.